homes in these areas. Top note I had was a clipping, says a draw from Plains Historical Society. Gathered family of early life for timber area. And I want to say that the group here is important to me. Those of you who know who they be, know why this is. There are people I've gone to school with. I have siblings here tonight. My wife is here tonight. There are people that I have met from the university here. Dick told me he'd be here. I'm not going to elaborate or document this any further. I am going to say, first of all, that our mother went to school in this building at one time. When she attended a trial at the Catholic, probably in 1920. And so this is a sort of emotional building to me. In for having made that statement, I have to say I may not have information here acceptable to all. And I've taken notes from my grandmothers at an early age. They both talked freely, and I remember a lot of it. I haven't reviewed much of it here tonight, but a lot of it got away from me too. And so I've wrestled with family history for a long time. And I have a family history, a father history, letters and notes. And I found out some things, like historians don't always agree. I finally decided it was better to come out with a cry at something that might be more or less unacceptable and let the thing wash down the drain completely. I mean, you could correct it, document the changes, and I guess that's all right. Unfortunately, I probably will not be able to bring up anything tonight that would be that stimulating to you. I am going to start out with one, though. I think the family tree concept is a misnomer. I don't think there really is such a thing as a family tree. Our families do not come from one ancestor. Go back to where you are, and we go back to four grandparents, then great-grandparents, and it doubles. I once told my mother that I had twice as many ancestors as she had. It took her a little while to adjust to that crack. But I think it's true. And so we don't go back to one king, and probably none of us have kings. We go back to a lot of people. And I found where a husband and wife had been checking back on their family tree, and lo and behold, they shared an ancestor back there somewhere. About the time of the Revolutionary War. I don't mean that's true in my case, but that could happen. So here you are, not down to roots, but down to a big wide base, heaven knows how wide. And if you take the group, the family, you're right at the top of it. But that is not the whole story. You will have, let's see, in our roots, traced back to one ancestor. That's the fellow who wrote this thing about roots I'm talking about now. He made a movie of it, and the thing really went over, and he traced it all over me back to one ancestor. Good gosh, he completely ignored at least two white families, besides all the black ones. You went back really to a very, of course, it's nice to know where the name came from or something. I'll go into that in a minute. We dropped the memory of our mother's families, I think pretty universally. Yet they contributed according to the laws of heredity and our mental ability and physical ability, and even our money legacies comes equally from them as it did from the family name. The family name, I guess, isn't quite that big. Uh, And of course, what happens on the other part of it? Let's say the Gabbard family right now is two brothers and sister. They still have holding up here. This is the top of the thing. This is the thing as it is now. Now watch what happens about the hourglass. Barry and Emma Gabbard have descendants, and already the hourglass is going out like that. You better believe it. And our family is as nothing compared to some families. The Gabbard name, family name now could be Baggert or Brady. The 10 grandchildren, it goes something like this. They're already in the way. One is a professor of French history in Canada. One teaches in a community college and is on the governor's committee. One graduated from Harvard, cum laude. Another graduated from Reed, magna cum laude. One works in a spiritual counseling. One is a preacher. One is in the Peace Corps in Africa. One has ability in sales and mechanics that is proving rewarding. One is an artist working in stained glass. One is a young waitress exploring for another career. One is in the building trades for a starter. They have been seen in Europe, California, Kashmir, Canada, the East Coast, India, and Africa, and Vietnam. That is where it started, on this upper part of that triangle business. Where will this family go? Where will any family here go, really? What new names will be thrown in? Well, we've already thrown in Baker and Martin and Patton and LaFollette and Railsback and Bennett and Turner. And those are names I just pulled out of the air and dig in my history. And all contribute equally to the Gabbard name. So where the Gabbard canyon is, and of course they show partly where they come from, a little ditch behind the house. There's a gulch betraying some of them being connected with California at one time. Well, this was supposed to be a little bit on history. And I want to pull out for you, I think, the atmosphere feel of about 1915 on the Wild Canyon. I remember the trip from Gaston, Oregon in 1915. We had what was called a light wagon in those days, a team, and me behind the wagon were two Jersey heifers. My mother and I, with the family, Dad stayed behind a day or two, winding up his job as mail carrier in Gaston. He took the train up with the furniture. My mother and I were accompanied by Charlie Martin, an uncle, long dead now. And I think a cousin, Charlie Wall, I have no idea where he is. Anyway, and when we left Gaston, I don't know. It was well over 65 years ago now. And we camped. And those of you who've been in this country for a while will know where it is. There was an overhead trestle across the Gales Creek, right above the Batemans. Any of you remember that place? Yeah, we camped there the first night. My mother and I slept in the light wagon, and the other guys hadn't noticed. And the next day, and I don't remember when we got there, we went on up to where the house is. And I think, well, I don't know, the stove might have been set up outside for a while. Because the house had to be repaired. I think they got a mason to come up and look at the chimney. So in those days, you put your chimney up on top of a pair of tuba twills because it saved the cost of brick. Well, we were living in the middle of the burnt woods. I understand this to be the official designation of that area. Long ago, the Indians set fire to it so the game would come back. And it was a different kind of a country, really, than it is now. There was dust on that, what's called a Cox Knob, right across from the Gagnon House. You could see cattle or horses going up and down that mountain with the dust flying. Walking between our house and the schoolhouse, there were bare hills. I cracked on them when it comes to the timber, now you can't see what's there. And this gave a little bit different kind of a terrain. I remember going after cattle, we got a cattle range. I went nearly past the creek to get them up one way, and as far south as Gales Creek, once or twice, the other way. And they would eat things like wild pea vine. I could see the old boss and yet, with this wild vetch, you might say, hanging out of her mouth. And they produced mightily in the summertime. Sweet pea, I guess you call it, wild pea vine. This had been a recognized grazing range, and I don't know for how long. Different people down the valley sent their cattle up there to graze, like during the summer season. It sometimes caused us embarrassment. We had bulls among them. We had to watch, or thought we did. And one 4th of July, when we went somewhere, the cattle got in and ate the roasting meal, corn. But that was our heritage from the Indians, not the cattle from the Indians, but the grazing land. It is not grazing land now. It is covered with timber, and that is the future of it, is not for the game or the farming, but for the growing of the timber. With gas. Companies have leased some of that land for gas drilling. According to these notes, there's something else. As a small boy, and once during that time, I had copper-toed shoes, which were a sign of the times. There were no elk in through there then. May have been over on the coast, but we never saw them. There were no possum. Can you imagine a world without possum? I've seen them everywhere. The timber post office was going then. We walked up the hill, or didn't always walk, of course, you'd have a wagon. And you could come down the hill from somewhere up there and come straight down to the post office, which was across the railroad track about where the old law post office was. And the man who did the bags had the post office. I remember there was some discussion, how could Mr. Bangs get the job as postmaster? And it seemed maybe that Mr. Bangs was a Republican Central Committee member at one time. He worked in the party. And I guess he had the job until some friend of his in the Model T coupe came to see him one time and they had an accident and destroyed one or both of them. He was a huge man, probably, as I remember, 250 pounds or more. Anyway, we walked down that hill, and there was the post office just above the railroad tracks. And I was learning to read in those days by sitting on my father's lap and pointing out work, trying to get him to teach me how to read the funny paper. And I remember a sign that, I think it went something like this, permission to pass irrevocable at any time. I became, as a very small boy, very interested in that word, revocable. And I guess I was tutored on it until I made an impression on my memory. Across that railroad track was McKnight's store. And you could buy, at times, anything from a pair of Wolverine shoes to bacon. I don't think they were very long on fresh meat on account of there was no refrigeration. By bacon or ham, something like that. And on beyond the little valley, out beyond the school and the ways out, there was perhaps the most beautiful stand of timber none of us will ever see the like again out there. To see some walk to that, the Eagle Lumber Company or the timber mill or somebody had cut it, left it, a straight row across. There those trees were standing, you see someone walking into that stand. And I guess it'd be a little like going in through the doors of a cathedral. It was a wonderful stand of timber. There was a man, and I should know his name, and his sister had held two homesteads there. And I remember the talk at the time was that that folk sold his for $16,800, and what a state he made. There it was, 160 acres of pure logs piled together as thick as the hair on a dog's back. Depressed me as a kid. Of course, there was the railroad track, and the trains were big then. You've had no idea the trouble I've had trying to think of all this stuff. Let's see, well, there was Glenwood School there. There's nothing left of it anymore. There used to be big posts by the gate and then pieces of plank on top for Sunbury boys to sit on at lunchtime. And in my time there, those school kids always ate out, winter and summer. They did not take kindly to eating into the stove. I think later they'd go for that. But that's only a story. In that school were assorted Gabberts, Haydens, Elliott, Smith, Gravel, Marquis, Miller, and some other names, two families of which I cannot recall. They were not there very long. At one time, they bought school equipment. They bought football, basketball, softball, and hardball, and a bat. And in my time in grade school, no one ever thought that any of that ought to be replenished. It just wore and wore and disappeared and so on. And I don't know how long they depended on it. School board had bought for deal. They didn't have this idea of maintenance and replacing and so on. They built a new anteroom on it, too. It smelled like a couple of school anterooms, I guess. We put our school out there. And during my time there, they even put in a water system. And you could run outside and to get a drink from a faucet, and there was a sink there. At first, they carried it in a bucket and put it in a big pot. And tried to keep the leaves out of it. They planted things on Arbor Day. The automobiles, I guess John Marquis showed up with Model T about 1922. That was the first time the school would add them. Pretty soon, though, they all got them. The Haydens bought a second-hand Dodge Jeep. And during that time, there was World War I. And I remember Jake's in the funny paper. He got into it, and his picture was in the funny paper. He's sitting at the bottom of the trench, eating something, and the bullets were going overhead. But it impressed me at the time. The picture came out after the war was over. And I remember current events. They said, these planes are something else again. They will go between 30 and 50 miles an hour. Think of that. And we did think of it. I guess we tried to be properly impressed. Never occurred to us at the time it might go faster. There have been some changes in that department since then. What did we eat then? We ate potatoes and dry beans and apples and what other garden truck we could get a hold of. Our family only occasionally had game. There were others that did better. Arthur Elliott, and this is no secret, had a reputation so that when he died, his widow was besieged by people who came to buy his gun. It wasn't Winchester. Was it a Marvin? Something like that. Marlin. Yeah, that's what he had. The man did, I guess, he put out lots of shells. He knew how to get there. Then there was the flu epidemic. And the story was plain and simple, as I remember. I remember only two or three things he said about the flu epidemic. That you could be big and strong one day, and then the next day or two, you might be dead. How do you cope with the flu? There was two words, castor oil. Those that took the profit for the physics survived. If you went to Dr. Vi, you got the right physics. Dr. Vi's house is up here. It's at 24th Street there in the corner by Light. And I saw him building that 2 years ago. Got $1.25 a day for the wheelbarrow the day on. On that thing. It's still a beautiful looking house. It's solid looking. Well, let's see. I went to high school at Banks 3 years. Forest school 1 year. I would get up in the morning, there the whole family had to get up. And I would hit loose about 7 o'clock to catch the train at Casterbrook. Sometimes they had two cars and a steam engine, sometimes a skunk called a diesel driven 16-cylinder electric tie-up truck. It held about 25 passengers. The rear was a nice round seat, and you could look back and see the rails. You see this behind you. I guess it's kind of unique and nice. And running up that hill in the morning, at night, sometimes both ways in the dark, I think toughened me considerably and opened up to me vocational opportunities at a later date. I was tough enough to coach wrestling, and I've always thought that getting to school to catch that skunk in the morning probably made part of that. Of course, I didn't go on the training course program here. The stage ran an hour where I could get to dear old FGI, the School of Spiritual Mentality, they told us that. And I took in my junior year there and met such sterling characters as Miss Furman, who was excellent, Mr. Errett, who seemed to be quite beloved, Mr. Gunn McGlasson, who was superintendent or principal, I forget which, and got the ring, the hand off from the street, the janitor ran it. It was another school that the principal got the ring on mechanical building. That was at Banks. And at Banks, the periods were flexible. You know, sometimes so long, other times not so long, depending on how the prof's algebra class went. Well, I took another kid one time too on the train, my brother and I, to take a sister, one more. We gathered up and we passed to the goodies to go, and I do not for the life of me remember how we got up to that railroad, whether we walked up and caught that train or not. I guess Dad brought us back. But the train left, I believe, in the morning sometime. Chances are, if we took on that one through my life, maybe nothing of it too much. But the trip down was wonderful, up through Mayo and Cochrane. And if you want to know what it was like, drive along over north of Garibaldi, and I'd say that area in there had not changed much. If that isn't 1922, and of course, the reason it is that the people in Portland who wanted access to coach and built houses over there, and they had a way to get there on the train. I think they ran great big specials in the summertime. And really, really made the revenue. Well, we went to Bald Grove for 4th of July occasionally and watched people come in with Mitchell automobiles, Model T's. And I don't remember some of the other things. I remember a speaker one time talking about gold and the gold and grain. And it was hauled up over the old military road, I'm pretty sure. And Joe McCurney, who some of you forgetting was gone now, talking just this winter. He said he went up there with Dad once in 1913, and it was a memorable trip for him in a way because Dad did not crowd his horses. And he thought he would never get there or would never get back. He went fishing probably was there, and he said Dad was up to the house putting it out. So, my mother and I, Dad, did go up to the house from time to time. I suppose it would have been 1914. Maybe we went more than once, I don't know. But we camped down to what we have always called Rimmore. There was a sandbar there. And they piece of old saw, but a circular saw, built a fire on that, cooked on it. And I acted the creek sang the song at night. It's pretty wonderful. Well, the people, oh yeah, the shingle mill, I must mention that. Up that creek was the remnants at that time of a water wheel. That was Mount Greenwater, and I know that's the wrong pronunciation. Had a shingle mill there with about a 14-foot wheel on it. The water dropped into these little turn, maybe not too fast. You run the water into it for the food. There used to be a field up there. There is no field there now. I don't know how many shingles, and I never did see how he took the power off the wheel. In fact, when I saw it, the top of the wheel was gone. But the shaft was still there. Dad bought the lumber and the iron and the wheel from me. He was told to go to the The people that were around there in the houses, like at Marquis and so on, they may have worked at the lumber company, or they worked on the road, which I have the picture here. And I even know a few of the names here, and I helped document some more of them tonight. And they would go up like the Marquis and take a shortcut up over the hill there. There was a trail of sort up to the Eagle Lumber Company. There was lots of walking in those days. As a small boy, I used to like to hike along the road, a little kick around in the dust. People would drop change out of their pockets. Well, after they got traveling in cars, you couldn't pick up for the dime. I think they were digging out the back of it, unearthed a dime or something. It was not to be considered an annual income or anything of that sort, but I remember once found a little bit piece here. And that was an hour's work. Yes, I already talked about that. I didn't talk to you about energy, did I? You know, this energy business is shortages. This is nothing new. When we went up to that place at that time, there were no chainsaws. More than that, there were some of it. Families that did not have the old drag saw. And I remember one time my mother and I wrestled some bark off of an old stump up by the wrong side of the road so the dad could throw it on his wagons and came home. And lo and behold, one of our neighbors went by and picked it up himself. it was pretty tough scrummaging. We sawed up dead burnt poles. You know, saw them a hand, saw it others, it was a kind of a constant battle to scrum it up, fuel, keep the cook stove going, keep the wood stove going. And I'm sure it was tough rather than have this impression of it at this late date. Well, let's see. I guess I'll swing back. Let's see here. Hayden's got the Dodge to be a couple of companies. The name Gabbert, and I know I'm treading on thin ice here, or maybe treading on nothing at all. Where does the name come from? Well, it came from California, it came from Missouri, back to Virginia, across an Alsace-Lorraine. The San Francisco State Park told me one evening that she thought that the name Gabbert or Gabbert, and we don't know whether it was French or German, there were three of them. David, Himmel, and Gottlieb came to this country before the Revolutionary War. Well, anyway, she said the name Gabbert is probably Gaelic, and it means Smith. If you're dead. Now, I hope that you have a little better feeling of what it was like to live before refrigerators. Oh, the energy business, Dad did get sometime around 1980. Probably the heaviest drag saw was ever built. He hauled it on the sled with tea. He was a very strong man, and he Now, this is a little weak on the timber side of it, but I tried to tell you what at least it looked like. It was a bustling town. You can find a description of it in lots of Western stories. If you just shift the emphasis from mining to logging. Any questions?
Don, what was your mother's maiden name?
Oh, Martin.
Martin, okay. Then what were your other grandparents' names? You said Gabbert and Martin, and got a Patton back there somewhere.
Oh, yes, there's loads of mothers.
Well, I was going to say, but
my grandmother was a Patton.
Okay.
And in the Martin side, there was an Ann Martin, who was the daughter of my great-grandfather's brother, who taught here in the Indian school. She also taught my grandmother, like in the 70s. And Patton Valley was named after her. And of course, they claim relationship to General Patton, although he seems to have been a little eccentric. The Patton history I've got to pick up from Mary Patton. I have quite a number of followers from the gathering. Norman Martin, who was my grandfather's uncle, I guess, he helped organize the church at Gaston. And on his grave, they say out here, was born in Scotland. Any other time I can think of that town in Scotland. So we have to look up on that.
Well, ancestors must have been neighbors to Smithies, were they up there in Patton Valley at the same time?
The Pattons were, yes. In fact, the Pattons bought
next door,
part of the claim, the donation land claim, which was my mother's side.
Yeah.
And the cherry grove on the rest of the claim.
Yeah.
Well,
that's what I was thinking.
More,
there must have been
one Patton family later, of course. My grandmother took care of her father. When she married this young Scotsman named Martin, went to Copeland and worked. But after a bit, there came this letter of distress from the father saying, if you will come back and help take care of mother, there are 60 acres of land up here for you. And I guess that was quite a bit then, just the same as it would be now. In fact, I think you may have been able to do more with it. You weren't buying insurance, you weren't buying gasoline. Talk about energy. We burned wood and coal oil. You know. Yes.
You have a picture of a road crew.
I do.
Okay. What road were they building?
Oh, well, this is toward timber, of course. I think that this picture was taken between the Miller place and that is above the Gales Group there, you know, and the foot of the timber hill somewhere. I think that's where it came from.
It wasn't a railroad.
No, this is a county road. A lot of, you see, the road districts then were not handled by the bureaucrats. It was a separate, small entity of its own. People in that district got together and voted the taxes on it, and then they took the jobs on it. And it wasn't ideal in every way. There was a lot of layoffs during the winter and so on. But there was a certain percentage, some of my folks included, and I too worked on that thing. I sold banked roots, worked behind a Fresno, run a wheeler, a scraper. I didn't drive a team. I didn't drive a team. I didn't like to drive. Our family were horsemen, but when it came my generation, we lost that. And I got in on about the last of it, too. I went down to Klamath one time, and there was a museum full of stuff I worked with just before I was about 20. Never used it anymore. A lot of you people have never seen it. You don't know what a Johnson bar is. Probably don't even know what a Cooper is. That's part of the horse's harness, not the end from the collar. There was a change about that time, you see. From 1932, I think I saw my first bulldozer in full action. that was the absolute end of plowing the ground, root digger, and doing it on hand. That road was originally built up there, pretty much by hand. Later the county sent in a power shovel. So. And they hauled gravel in those days too, they hauled it in wagons. The bottom of the bed were tubercores rounded at one end, and you'd shovel it into that, didn't have crackers, you'd shovel it into that, and then they turned the tubercore on end, the gravel dropped through.
Yeah.
And then it built something better than no gravel at all. It was better than a punching hole up there. A lot of what would now be peeler logs was split into punching. A nice, smooth, no-knot fir will split. And that was what we rattled with at first. Cars used to get stuck, though, too. I remember we had a coal laid in our yard when we worked for quite a little while. I don't know what happened to you. We got stuck first, and then we was pulled up into the yard and left. And someone came and got it eventually. Yes.
Do you know how early Bond Grove was established as a picnic area?
If you've listened to my talk tonight, you'll find it noticeably short of dates. I do know that about
sounds like
probably 1916, Bald Glory was in its full glory, and there were people in the swimming pool, water wings, and so on.
I just wondered how far back it went, because it was there as far back as I can remember.
1890?
No, not that far.
Well, what I mean is it was probably there in 1890. Must have been. It was a natural. For a thing.
Did you remember that?
Joseph Gale seems to be active here, and I'll tell you where I ran into some stuff on Jay. Joseph Gale wasn't down here at all. Is in Eagle Valley, Eastern Oregon. And Eagle Valley has lots of things. Lots of sunshine, you know, lots of winter.
Where is Eagle Valley in relationship to other things in Eastern Oregon?
Yes,
near Baker.
It's, what's that name, Mount Vernon? If you were at Mount Vernon and you pointed the right road, I can't tell you which direction, you would soon be in Eagle Valley. And it is a beautiful bowl with irrigation ditches running here and there. He evidently wanted drier winters. And a lot of the time up there, well, it wouldn't be running in the winter, it'd be frozen.
Is that any connection with Eagle Lumber Company?
Maybe. Eagle Lumber Company was promoted by some people with the name of, it was a good Irish, Kearns. Eagle Lumber Company had lumber yards in Portland. And they had some beautiful cutting for a long, long time. The railroad was in there about 1910. And it's kind of interesting, those of us who are interested in logging, I've been over some of the earliest Eagle Lumber cutting, I'm sure it was. And you know, it didn't reforest naturally. I think I'm right on this. Jack was with it. It looks like that the stuff, for reasons that I'm not aware of, just didn't begin to reproduce, and they had finally just recently, 5 years ago, begin to replant it, to replant it. A sort of negating idea that the forest will reforest itself. And it will, sure, but not always. Or maybe it takes an awfully long time sometimes. Eagle Lumber Company would have picking in terms of cheap lumber. Exceeded only by one place I ever heard of. Think of this, will you? 1,000 acres with trees from 6 to 9 foot through, cut down, bucked up, and that was all in the mill pond. They simply put in the planks, picked it up in the water, and put it into the mill. And that was at Valsetts. Valsetts is west of Dallas. Valsetts gets more rain than almost anybody, and it grows big trees. But the Eagle Lumber Company would have had picking next to that. Not that good. There isn't anything that good anymore. Yes.
I know you thought it was a total of fire. I just thought people might be interested in reminiscing about that.
Yes, I thought it was a total of fire. That was in the middle of the Depression, and I had a job up there at basic wages, keeping books, cleaned up, loading cars, and a shingle gun. And it was good, clean work in a way, and I couldn't see whether it was exactly what I had in mind when I was getting ready to start out on my own, but I was glad to take it. The guy I worked for, David Snyder, was nice people. And then, one hot August day, there was a smoke beginning to curl up to heel there. And that was the beginning of the film of Bird. And a fire warden came along. He gave me an axe, a shovel, a whole bag. And to see me in the shape I'm in this day, you won't believe this story. I don't let that hesitate when I talk about history. His name was Hankin. Slender and fast, and he hit out off to catch up. The east wind was blowing, things like that. And we hit out across the valley of the Gills, creeping up that slope up the other side. He was screaming. I was carrying those tools. I came up with him, but I always felt a little believe it. We couldn't do anything about it. There was no stopping that. It'd go 3 miles at a time. Yes, I was there. I was there at the time that the guy's blankets got burned up. And I was there one time and we had nothing to eat at all except one aisle of medicine. But the fellows didn't complain. I was a cook at that time. I've seen that stuff cut loose and throw chunks of wood as big as a boy on this table. I can't see. We went down into a hole one night in the evening. The theory was that we fight fire even when it was damp. We went up and went down into a canyon to stop it coming. There was a couple of old fellows there who were having trouble making it. We all got down there and started to fight. And then here came the word, you know, that we had to get out of there. And what it was, and say this is the ground, it was about that high. The fire was rolling like that, like water coming. And it was going about as fast as you would walk. And I became concerned. I looked around for these two older men who were sort of crippled up. And they were already at the end of the line going out. they felt their, you know, their handicap motivated going around. Shot of adrenaline, I guess. So it wasn't really coming that fast, but I've never seen anything like that. A wall of fire coming. I've seen a wall of water in eastern Oregon, you know, when they have those flash floods. It's about like that. It would, in that fire, it would fly, it would cree at night. You'd hear it hit the tops, you know, and burn the green timber. Over on the other side, or up on the round top of the most beautiful trees you ever saw. Not so big, I think, maybe like this, but so straight and free of limbs. Beautiful. And of course, they were taken out by the Consolidated Room Operation. I guess it was all different. And when the fire got down, a lot of that round top country lay like great big rock piles of shale rock, looked like crushed rock piled. But the fir pretty much sure we made even adapted this country. There, you'll see nothing like that anymore, I guess. Looks to me like it's all been covered up now by timber. Somehow or other got a hold and begin to go again. It burnt right down to what the foresters call mineral soil. And that mineral soil looked like piles of fresh rock. That fire smoked up totally. It raised heck with industry. Cost me my bookkeeping job. Did I tell you how it started? You all
tell us.
Do you know what a hallback is?
Donkey?
The the donkey has a pretty good sized cable. And you don't grab that thing and run out with it. You take a small one first and go out around so that the man can pull. And then it pulls out one a little bigger, about like so, that's on a block. And that's pull out the big one. Well, the haulback went out there and people and came back to, I think, a cedar stump. And they gave it a good buzz, and like the caveman's stick in the cedar shavings, it, the friction of the cable against the wall started. And then up it went, it was picked up with that hockey string, which grew mostly until sometime in October.
How long was that fire? I mean,
what's that?
How long did that fire burn?
From August to October.
August to October.
Yes. And then the rain came to go down and stopped it.
Who did that? That was 33 in the morning. You're speaking. What year was
it? I think it was 33.
Yeah, well, that was more than the first place.
And did that go into timber?
Did that go into timber? No. Timber was pretty well walled off there by then. They wouldn't have cared if they were.
Oh, six.
I didn't get any of
the Cochran.
It burned a lot. I guess it dropped into the ocean.
Wasn't the Cochran fire one of the others?
That wasn't the last.
I think it was 39.
Yeah, I would take the 33 was probably
45. Yeah. And then West,
the same area.
West Timber burned in 41. The mill. And all of that.
Really cleaned it out. I worked the West Timber mill one time. It had overhead, there wasn't a lot of these little old electric motors sitting around. It was overhead shafts and power went down to that. And here and there they'd have a steam, little steam engine to run on something that took the extra power. There was an oiler running around all the time, putting oil on the bearings.
Speaking of that line setting the fire, way back when we was trying to beat the heat or the dry weather, we would work on what we call the hoot owl, of course you all know what that is. But get up before dark.
Before dark.
Before daylight, and where the steam was up in the donkeys, and then start up. Just beginning of the break of the day, and you see these lines, this tall back that you speak of, and the main line running out through it, you see a white light, static electricity coming on.
There's nothing like long, especially when you just took home to and you're watching it go in.
Yeah, no games.
Did you ever get